Hello and welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 14. It's me, Rafe Blanford, and with me are...
Ewan Spence.
Steve Litchfield.
And Stefan Constantinescu.
From Into Mobile. Thanks for joining us again, Stephanie's once again a special guest. We're going to get straight into it because we've got a lot to cover this week. And one of the things in the news over the last few weeks has been Ovi. And I know Steve's been looking at this. So do you want to take it away, Steve?
Yeah, as you all know, just a very 15-second recap. Ovi's Nokia's all-singing, all-dancing way of integrating games, music, maps, and sharing information. And I just a brief rant. It's really annoying. You'd have thought when they invented this concept 6 months ago that they'd have thought, hey, we could have an Ovi login, and that would log me into all the different elements consistently. But no, you go into Share, which is... I know they took over Twango. You have to have a Twango login. You go into Music on your device. You have to have a Nokia Music login. You go into Engage system on the first access. You have to have a separate login. I really can't see why they've shied away from having a global login for all these Ovi elements. It would make so much sense. Anyway, that rant apart, I've just noticed the last few days, it may just be me, or there's a whole new tab on Ovi. I've just gone on to, if you go on to Ovi.com, on the right-hand edge, there's Sync. Now, the Sync's functionality doesn't seem to be there yet. It's merely a trailer page. I can hear the frantic typing as Rafe and Ewan and Stefan tap it into their PC browsers. Obviously, Sync seems to be a SyncML-based solution to synchronize contacts and calendar from your smartphone straight up onto Ovi. As you know, I've been playing with GooSync, which is a third-party SyncML server that also pokes your calendar data into Google Calendar and via a slightly tortuous mechanism gets your contacts into Gmail contacts, which is all pretty swish, if a tiny bit fiddly. So Ovi is kind of moving into a market here which other people have addressed, but if you've already got your photos and video on Ovi, you've got your music through the Nokia Music Store, and you're happy with maps, and you're playing with Engage Gaming, it does make sense to keep some kind of... convergence there by having your contacts and calendar also on Ovi for emergency resyncing, say when you've got a new device and you want to get your stuff back onto a brand new device. But again, this thing about the multiple login is going to annoy me. If I have to get yet another username, yet another password for the Ovi sync thing, I'm going to be really, really annoyed.
Ooh, that's quite scary. So Nokia, pay attention. No more extra passwords. And while we're on that subject, can you implement something like OpenID, and you can then pretend to be with open standards and look cool to the rest of the web world? So I'm sure it's something that's being worked on, but it's not good that it isn't here yet.
Quite interestingly, Rafe, I've actually jumped back to the notes that I took at the Nokia World presentation and keynote back in November, and I actually section marked Ovi.com will feature media streams, contacts, music, maps, and I've got this in quotation marks, single sign-on.
Well, that's good. So it appears it's on the way, but
so
it's not good enough.
PowerPoint.
It's not good enough saying it's on the way. We want it now. And I'm just looking at the Ovi Sync page that Steve mentioned. That's interesting to see. They've got the little icons representing YouTube, MySpace and Facebook. So we're clearly going to be integrating also with the online services. And I think, in effect, this is going to be a large part of the Ovi web portal that was mentioned a while back, both, as you say, at the original launch and also at Nokia World. I think the other thing that's probably worth discussing at this point, which is the bit of Ovi that's actually... come out more than any other in the last few weeks, and that's what used to be Twango and is now called Share on Ovi. Steve, I know you've been having a quick look at this, and I know Stefan's looked at it as well. So starting with Steve, what's been your take on this so far?
Very fledgling, I have to confess. All I've done so far is sign up for it to stop someone else registering Steve Litchfield on my behalf. I'm getting these days of ID theft. I get rather nervous that people are going to log on to some of these major services as me, and then I can't get in under my own name. So leave me out of this at this stage. I'll let you know how I get on after the next couple of weeks.
So, Stefan, have you used Share on Ovi any more than Steve has?
Well, yeah, I registered an account and I tried to upload some images, and the first thoughts immediately are they're trying to copy Flickr, and it's so blatantly obvious it's not even funny. what separates their service from Flickr is currently you can upload as much as you want. So I have no clue how they're going to monetize that strategy. It ties in extremely well with Share Online 3.0, but other than that, there isn't really anything you can do on Share on Obi that you can't do on Flickr or YouTube. Yes, you have the hosting for, and I quote, 100 different file formats, but we haven't really seen how that will work yet. And they have this channels thing, whereas Flickr has sets, and it's just a complete clone, and there isn't really any differentiation that makes me want to switch just yet.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree with you. I took a look at this. I think I'd characterize it as they've actually done a pretty good job in making it user-friendly, but there isn't anything that really starts out as new to me. And as someone who's been on Flickr for quite a while, there isn't really impetus for me to move over. And actually, I think that could possibly be one of the problems in getting people to adopt it, you know, given the inertia behind sites like Flickr and YouTube, will Nokia be able to compete? There are a few things obviously going for it, one of which is, as you say, the multiple support for documents. I'm particularly thinking video here, and I've noticed the video quality on Share on Ovi is much better than it is on YouTube, for example. And Flickr have long been rumoured to be going to support video, but they're not actually there yet. So you can get everything on one site. The other thing is, of course, that this will be branded with the Nokia things, and so for complete novice users looking for a way to get stuff off their phone and onto the web, I think this could be quite a powerful solution. For all the popularity of Flickr amongst the tech crowd, you know, relatively speaking, the numbers aren't that great. Indeed, it's not even the biggest online photo sharing site. I think that goes to PhotoBucket. Yeah, and there are a couple of other
web shops. What are the numbers for Facebook? I seem to remember Facebook has got a huge amount of photos coming in that certainly rivals, possibly eclipses Flickr, but I don't have the numbers to hand.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and it's interesting there that that's being driven, obviously, by a slightly different reason than the Flickr stuff. And actually, Ovi could potentially come in with that kind of thing when we get the sync and when we get some of the other elements coming in. So I just want to get your three views on, you know, do you think Sharon on Ovi is going to take off, or is it something that's going to slowly disappear? I mean, for tech users, maybe, but what about for novice users? And start with Stefan.
Well, first of all, I'd say that the fact that Share for Ovi will be automatically configured on a brand new handset so that a user won't have to, you know, find their own Flickr service or Vox service, that's going to be huge. And just for that fact alone, people are going to sign up for it because it's on the handset. In terms of it taking off and forcing people to switch, I'm not really certain if we're going to see that happen. But again, what makes Share for Ovi interesting is how it's going to integrate into the other Ovi, how should I say this?
Properties.
The other Ovi, exactly, other Ovi properties. So my Engage friends will be able to see my pictures and they'll be able to see my calendar information as well as where I currently am. That, when you have all that contextual information, to quote Anssi Vanjoki, that's really where Nokia is trying to head. And that's where one site like Flickr or one site like YouTube can't really compete, because that sort of flow of information isn't established yet in the space.
Well, I don't think we're going to improve on that, and I'd absolutely agree with that. It's looking at the complete picture. But actually, you've just mentioned Engage, and I know Ewan's been following the events of GDC this week, which is, well, Ewan, tell us what GDC is and what's been happening there.
GDC is the Games Developer Conference, being held in San Francisco. And basically, all the people who write the stuff and develop stuff and market the stuff get in a place and talk about it. So it's a typical conference. Nokia and Anthony were joining again, were keynoting. And two things drew my attention. The first one, of course, is yet again, they're just educating the media, the press, the developers about what Nokia's vision of Ovi is. Basically, you know, they're repeating what they've said every other time, and then they're adding one more thing. So they're slowly building up the picture of Ovi over a period of 12 to 18 months in the public eye. And I think that's a good thing when you look at the problems they had with the original Engage strategy. And I've discussed that and critiqued that many a time on the Insight podcast. The fact that they're now taking their time to develop the idea, and new things like I think it was you, Rafe, that posted up in IEM midweek that, you know, gaming had done very well in the last year or two to bring the U into gaming, and now it is going to be bringing the community into gaming. And it's a two-way street. So, I mean, I could be standing in the middle of a street somewhere, snap a picture of somewhere, and it gets rendered and it gets put into a game, and somebody else has to find it in a very basic treasure map game. What's going to happen to the actual games when, you know, the designers and their blasted out heads and weird ideas get a hold of all these tools, a device that's always on, that's always connected, that has GPS, that can take pictures, that can do video, that has your entire address book online, that can interface with your inbox. And I think that the main one you mean, like, as I said in the example, you can be walking along and suddenly you get a text saying, I'm under attack, but it's actually somebody in a game. It's one of your armies texting you in the real world. And it's that pollution to create a new gaming element. I always talked about, you know, how does Engage fight gaming and the gaming console world? Well, they're doing what Nintendo did. Nintendo said, oh, it's no longer about hardware and bits per second. It's about a nifty controller. Here it is here. And nothing to do with the processing power. Nokia is saying it's all about the community and the sharing aspect. And here it is here. The second thing that drew my eye was Nokia were talking to the developers. Yeah, I didn't see anybody from Apple there doing any good presentations about getting developers in. Didn't see anybody from Microsoft or Sony either. So,
I think they had the Xbox stuff coming out in terms of gaming across Xbox and the Zune. So Microsoft and others were there, but certainly from the mobile world, it was...
Yeah, and not speaking directly to the developers saying, our stuff is cool, come and play with these toys. Yes, they made lots of consumer-facing statements, but there was very few statements from companies other than Nokia that were saying, our toy box is brilliant. They're basically on a hearts and minds strategy, and good luck to them.
And it's worth pointing out there are actual... We've talked about the waffly area there a little bit, and I agree with you, and I think what comes in here is... Nokia at several events have shown a video which showcases what they refer to as the fourth screen, and this is the idea that the mobile becomes the fourth screen. And of course, the idea behind this is bringing in a lot of the social and the contextual stuff, which is part of the heart of the Ovi strategy. And with gaming, this is something that you might see tying into the social networking. So I think this is a particularly strong argument. We've already seen the social aspects of gaming, particularly in the Xbox community, how strong that can be. But probably a better analogy is to look at how social networking has transformed the web and how much of a part of Web 2.0 that has become. And I think what Nokia is seeking to do is tie that all together and tie it into their other strategies and put it onto mobile, which they regard as sort of the ubiquitous technology that's going to be in everybody's pockets, the always-on internet device that's always with you. And you start getting some very powerful concepts. But I also wanted to touch on some of the other things out of GTC where there are some actual news announcements that are relevant right now rather than conceptual stuff. The first of these, I think, was Glue Mobile, which announced a number of games, including two tying in with upcoming games, one of which is the Batman film. And they also announced some casual games as well. But I know Stefan's also been following this. And what was the big announcement that caught your eye, Stefan?
Well, it wasn't really an announcement, but it was a follow-up interview after GDC was over. But the head of the new experience division, his name is Yako, and I'm not even going to try to say the last name.
Hold on, that's one of the Animaniacs, isn't it? There's Yako, and there's Ansi, and there's Petrikoya.
Ewan's absolutely right yet again. But he essentially said that by the end of 2008, there's going to be 50 to 60, as in 5060 games out for Engage. And there will be at least one of them that's a massively multiplayer online game that interacts with the real world. Is this Project White Rock? Maybe. Who knows? And he said that Engage will launch in a few weeks, but honestly, I'm not going to believe it until I can install it and play on my N82.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you there. And just to reiterate the point, for those who aren't aware, the Engage Classic, over the course of about 2 to 3 years, released, I think, about 30 or so games. Is that right, Ewan?
No, it's more than that. Hold on, I'll get my box and go count them while you all talk about something else.
Okay, Ewan's still an Engage Classic fan because he's well, that's just urine for you, basically. But it is a much faster rate of release. That's almost one a week. Well, it is more than one a week during the year, and that's a pretty impressive release schedule. It's going to be interesting to see how they actually deal with that number of engaged games in the game client, but that's an issue for another time. We've now sort of covered Engage, and we've just posted our big N96 preview on the site, and I just want to turn back to that and get the views of the panelists on the insight here on this device, because it's been getting some mixed reactions from people. People have been saying that, for example, the N96 is a successor to the N95, which personally I don't feel is accurate. I would see it very much as a sister device, in the same way that the N77, the other DVB-H N-series device, aside from the N92, of course, was a sister device to the N73. I'd put the N95 and the N96 in that category, but I'd be interested to see what the other reaction, what the rest of you guys think. And the other thing that's caused a little bit of dismay is the fact that it doesn't have a 3D graphics acceleration chip co-processor. And again, you know, people are saying, well, that's going to have bad implications for Engage games and whatever. But now that we've had sort of a week to digest, 2 weeks to digest the announcements of the N96, what's your view on this device? And I'll start with Steve.
I take what you said in your preview stroke review today. I think that's pretty apt. I can see Nokia's point of view where they position devices like this is video stroke mobile TV focus. This one's photography focused and so on. And I'm fully behind that. Although if you get too many model numbers, then you do start to confuse users as well as confuse geeks like us who try and cover it all. And what's frustrating for me, and this is slightly going off the tangent, but I think it's relevant. And we've covered on this in a previous insight. And I know this is one of Stefan's bugbears as well. Is the whole S60 compatibility thing. Now I've no problem with Nokia saying what devices A, B, C, D, E, and F. They've each got different application sets, the different focuses. As long as the poor user who buys device A thinks, I really want that feature from device B, like internet radio, for example, I'll just download the client and run it on my device. But it doesn't work like that. And I've been bashing my head against a brick wall this morning trying to install Nokia's new internet radio on an E51 and an E90. And in both cases, it just plain doesn't work. And I cannot for the life of me see why internet radio, which runs fine on a lowly Nokia N73, shouldn't run on my E90. And it's simply because they haven't bothered to set up the appropriate permissions in the SIS file and whatever. And I really find this very frustrating. So that's a slight rant.
Slightly off topic there, thanks, Steve.
Sorry, the N96, it's all about positioning, as you say. It's a video stroke TV focused. I'm really impressed under the hood with some of the stuff you mentioned, like the extra media codecs. Being able to play WMV videos, I think that's a major step forward in terms of wider compatibility. Having the dedicated audio chip and the dedicated H.264 playback chip. I know it hasn't got sort of graphics acceleration for games, but there's plenty of graphics acceleration there for watching video and watching TV. So it's got plenty under the hood for me to play with, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, and moving on to Stefan, what's caught your eye on the N96 front?
Well, it would have to be what hasn't caught my eye, because I actually think the N96 is kind of a hideous phone. And I seem to be the only one who has this opinion. So I'm not the only one who has this opinion, but I'm not really liking where the trend of N-series design is heading. It seems that every generation they try to make these things even more and more shiny, and the fact that the plastic is very slippery. I've dropped my N82 several times. I've never dropped my N95 because of the soft plastic on the back, but in terms of actual hardware and software, I was actually surprised to read your article, and you said that this is the first phone to have ST microelectronics processors inside, so it's not a regular Texas Instruments thing. And the fact that it doesn't have hardware acceleration, I think that is completely irrelevant, because out of the 20 or so million people who have an Engage device, maybe a percent or two know who makes the processor inside, and of that 1 or 2%, maybe they know if it has hardware acceleration or not. So all the people who are complaining, I think, you know, at the end, they're just complaining about specs, and when you complain about specs, you miss the overall picture.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. And I think the thing is, you know, especially on mobile phones, it's very difficult to compare processors between devices because megahertz doesn't really mean very much. There's a lot of other things in play. And what we should really be looking at is the consumer experience at the end of the day. And we can't really make any final judgments on that until we actually get to the final production devices. Ewan, have you got any thoughts on the N96? Do you like the design, for example?
Okay, right then. In order, the design sucks. It sucked on the N81, it sucks on the N96. I agree completely with Stefan, much as I hate using the phrase, I agree completely with the person before. It's too shiny. The keys around the cursor ring, the hang-up, the soft keys, the application C key, are all too close in one fixed unit. The keyboard underneath of the number keypads seems to be stylish yet cheap. And, you know, it's still got that double slider that just is useless when you start playing games. It might be fine now, but 6 months down the line, when your unit slides both up and down while you're trying to play Space Combat, it's Space Impact, not Space Combat, Space Impact. And I don't like the design. You know, I don't see anything that was wrong with the N95 layout design. Personally, I prefer the original N95 compared to the N95 8GB. It was much easier to see where the keys started and ended. There was a physicality to all the movements. I would just drop the double slider unit. In terms of what I think it's going to do and run, I'll comment when I see the production unit. So that should be in Insight episode 519, which will be due out in February 2009. Yes, great. Tell us what phones you're launching next. Actually, that's wrong. That's a good thing. I talked about that briefly in an article. The fact that we have stability, or from a developer point of view, they know that something that's written now for the 95s and the other N-series devices and the E-series devices should work as a third-party software right through to the middle of next year. So I think that will allow them to experiment more, and I think that's actually a good thing. And it also takes the focus away from the hardware. If Nokia sketch out their hardware for the next year or so, yeah, sure, other companies could preempt them and go a little bit higher in the specs and features. But Nokia are pushing software as the key for the next gen in OV. See the start of this Insight podcast. And I think that's where they were correct.
Okay, thank you. Well, I was expecting to have to be cynical about the N96 and say what I didn't like, but after the grumpy old men before me have just been, I don't think there's really any need for me to do that. I'm actually going to say I rather like the design. When you held it in the hand, it did look rather swish and shiny, and I think it will appeal more to the fashion-conscious crowd. Perhaps that's why it's not appealing to the techie people so much, because it has got this sort of shiny toy feel to it. But when I held it when I had the hands-on time with it, it did feel like a very solid device. The build quality was pretty good, and the slider felt much better than, say, the original N95, and I would say even better than the N95 8GB. I know the keypads come into criticism, but I would say when you actually try it, it isn't as bad as it seems. The keypad is actually quite usable and did have good tactile feedback. I'm just going to share with you the comment that Stefan's put into the back channel, and he said, hands on, it's the whole point. You need two hands to hold it because it's so huge. Well, yeah, that's probably a fair point. And yes, it is a very big device compared to some of the S60 phones out there, and especially compared, of course, to, you know, the slimline feature phones. But if you put it next to, say, the 6220 Classic, for example, it does look enormous, but then it does have a 2.8-inch screen. But one thing we'll come back to in a future insight is actually the lines between N-series and mobile phones from Nokia, as in the non-N-series S60 devices, does seem to be blurring a lot more. And it's coming down to, you know, less subtle things like perhaps phone design, maybe the amount of memory that the phone ships with, and to a certain extent software, or even so, that's starting to disappear. Of course, the one big thing about the N96, which we haven't really mentioned yet, is DVB-H, which allows for mobile TV. So, Ewan, we'll go with Steve. So, Steve, are you looking forward to trying this out in the UK?
I've been trying to try DVB-H out for the last 5 years. Then they had the Nokias at the 7710. They had some trial units fitted with a prototype replacement backplate, which included a DVB-H receiver, and they had trials in the Oxford area, which is only 30 miles from here. And I was just missed out on the trial. I was going to zoom up there and have a play with it. So I've been trying on and off to play with the different prototypes like the N77, N92, and I keep missing out. And here, yet again, we've got a device that will arrive with DVB-H compatibility, and the UK doesn't seem at all interested in DVB-H technology at the moment. It's a real shame. So I guess a holiday to Italy might be in order.
Holiday to Italy or maybe to Finland. Stefan, have you been able to use DVB-H in Finland ever?
I've used it at the flagship store when I'm the one person who actually touches the N77 and tries it maybe for 45 seconds. And then I say, all right, this is interesting. This is all television programming in a language I don't really care and want to know. So practically, I'm not interested at all because I'm a part of that quote-unquote YouTube generation, and I would rather search for content than see whatever's on the four or five channels on there right now.
Okay, no, that's fair enough, and actually that's a good debate in itself. Ewan, I know there is a legal explanation for why we have no DVB-H in the UK, so do you want to explain it to us?
Well, the reason is, of course, that Spectrum is organised by Ofcom, and Ofcom and the government a couple of years ago decided that what the UK needed was DAB, digital audio broadcasting, which is used in most digital radios nowadays. And, of course, DAB isn't making money for the broadcasters. We're already seeing DB-specific channels being closed down. Advertisers aren't buying radio advertising because it's not reaching enough people. So what has happening with DVB is it's actually been through the European Parliament have actually said Europe will use DVB-H, get rid of everything else to all the member states. Now, this still has to be ratified and go through the process. It is a similar way why all of Europe has GSM and something like America and other countries are very patchwork. It's because GSM was regulated by the European Parliament and Commission and Council of Ministers to say you will use GSM. And everybody humped and grumped, apart from the person that owned the GSM copyrights and everything, it was quite happy. DVB-H, of course, owned by Nokia, quite happy now that Europe has been regulated and told that DVB has to be used all over. So what it means is that I think we have to start trials by 2011 or 2012 in the UK. Spectrum is being taken back. DVB kind of sits over the old UHF and the old 2G band radios, so it's part of the great digital dividend when everything gets switched off here in the UK. But it comes down to Stefan's YouTube point, which is, you know, there is a place for instantly delivered content, things like news, things like weather, things like traffic reports, things like The Archers. But there's becoming a much bigger place for people downloading what they want and listening to it when they want. The obvious comparison there is podcasting, but also YouTube and on-demand video. And how that's all going to match up, because we still only have 24 hours in our own day. When we're given more and more and more options to receive content, we'll use each one less and less and less. So DVB will never have the same impact that DAB had 5 years ago or FM had 20 years ago. It will be cute. Whether it will actually make big numbers in whatever the internet looks like in 3 years' time, I don't know.
So there we go. It's broadcast versus on demand. I would just point out, in the UK at least, DVB-H is likely to start to come in the next few years as we switch off the analog TV signals. And I actually think one of the things that may well end up pushing it is the Olympics in 2012. So the Olympics are actually going to bring DVB-H to the UK. So there's a good reason to hold the Olympics in London in 2012.
So now on the Insight, I think it's time, as the clock runs out, Rafe, we can have a look at the software. And there's been one bit of software that's been getting both lots of comments and news from ourselves and around the internet. Steve jumped in the story first of all. Steve?
Yes, I had a bit of a prompt from Rafe as well. The Google's native search utility, and it's a bit of a non-utility, and it doesn't actually do anything other than go online to Google, to submit a search to Google's mobile homepage. And the only, as Stefan pointed out in his blog, and he'll probably point out again in a moment, there's actually almost an easy way to do it without installing anything. But just to tell you people what the Google bit does, as soon as you launch the application, that can be from the standby screen on some phones, but not all, I hasten to add, it, it initiates an internet connection, which does save about 5 or 6 seconds while you have to manually either start that up yourself or wait while it happens on the, if you start up the normal browser. So it kicks off an internet connection, takes your search string, and then by the time you've entered the string, it's made the connection, it submits the search string to Google mobile site, and that then presents the results fairly immediately in your browser. So that's the plus point. It's also free, so there's nothing, no money changing hands. But the minus point, Stefan, if you want to explain your way of doing it.
Absolutely. I was absolutely fine with this application being completely rubbish, but then I saw the video where they claim that it takes 40 seconds to make a search on an S60 phone for quote-unquote Hotel Reno, and that's when I went absolutely livid. All you have to do in your web browser is set your access point to automatically connect and set your homepage to google.com, and from the standby screen, all you have to do is launch the browser either by clicking on one of the 6 or 7 shortcuts on top or hitting and holding 0, and the browser launches, automatically connects, and goes to Google. I don't understand why there has to be a dedicated application for this, and they hyped it up as an, oh, this will make your searching experience easier, when in reality, it doesn't really do that.
I mean, it ties very well in with a blog post I read from Ross Beatty, which is, this is Google's way of getting market share. This isn't to make it easier for anything. It's to make sure that whenever you do a search, you're using Google. One of the things that Google trailed off was, look at how many people on the iPhone are using Google. And that's because, of course, Google is one of the homepage settings on the iPhone. This is just a simple way for, you know, when we talk about search is going to be vital to mobile, the amount of people that will use this as a default, just because it's there, will probably be in the order of 80-85% of people who go online with these mobile phones. What other search engine has a chance when Google is the default in-your-face option? And I'm also pretty sure that every search that goes through, Nokia are going to get a little kickback of 0.1 cent. But over 10 million users who are connecting to the internet with these phones, even just on the N-series devices, that's a lot of kerching every year.
No, I think that's a fair point. And actually, I'll just come back to that and saying you have to remember that most users aren't into necessarily the customization, won't ever change their home page from their operator home page in the web browser. So a big Google icon makes it nice and easy for them. I'm not saying that these people are thick when it comes to using their phone. I'm just saying that it make it nice and simple for them, and they're more likely to use it.
Luddites shouldn't use smartphones. And, you know, that colors is something I always like to say, is, which is, you can't have a Windows XP computer until you know what the command line is for. That would stop family tech support issues in my circle stone dead, and I would be so grateful.
I'm glad to see we're being so all-inclusive in the insight. The interesting thing to note here, though, I think it's worth mentioning very briefly, is that Nokia and Google actually signed up to do a search agreement at MWC, and that's actually going to take place through the Nokia search client. And we'll see that becoming available, I would imagine, in the next few months in new devices. But it does seem slightly bizarre that Google have doubled up here and making their own search client available on the phone. Especially when mobile search is a more comprehensive application for search in general. My only complaint is it can be a little bit slow to load. I know Stefan's used mobile search and has the same problem. Do you think speed is that important, Stefan?
Well, I think that the search application, it's really all encompassing, where it searches all the content on your phone, including what you can find on the internet. Certainly, yes, it's slower now, but I can totally imagine there will be a firmware upgrade where the search application is launched automatically and it's in the background waiting to be loaded, sort of like the N81 has the music player application that's always on so that you can switch to it immediately.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. Steve, do you want to come back on that?
Just one comment and observation. We've seen the fact that this little search utility from Google only works on phones with a pencil key on this, so they can access it from the standby screen. And if you think about the timescales of the recent Nokia 60 phones, virtually every phone announced and released in the last year or so hasn't had a pencil key. I think, given that the Google policy is for employees to spend, is it 10 or 20% of their own of the company time on their own research products for the company, for Google, I think this is come out of somebody's sort of 20% spare time project, and he started it two years ago or so as a little native S60 programming thing that's finally seen the light of day, even though, given most devices don't have a pencil key, it, in a sense, it's almost irrelevant. So I think it's kind of a side thing. I don't think it's in any way indicative of a major direction for Google or Nokia. It's just a nice thing to have. It's been released and it's native, so let's not complain too much. But the big thing is when, as you say, when Nokia and Google get together with Search 4.0 or whatever in future firmwares.
Yes, no, I agree. You shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth. The only thing I'd say is I wish they'd implemented it as an active idle plugin, as Samsung have done on their S60 devices, where they just have a Google search box, exactly the same thing. One thing we haven't mentioned is the results, and I do think the Google mobile search results are now quite good, the way they've blended in general search results and local search results. So if you, for example, type for cinema, it'll bring up your local cinema and the film times, and if you type in weather, it'll show you a summary of weather. But if you type in, say, a news headline, it'll bring up news. But if it's a more general topic, it'll bring up the web page results. So whatever you're doing, I do actually think Google mobile search is worth using, whether you use it through this new client, through the web browser, or through the forthcoming Nokia search. I think that's all the time we've got for discussing on the Insight this week. So I'd like to say thank you very much to all the other participants. And it's goodbye from me, Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye from me, Ewan Spence.
Goodbye from Steve Litchfield.
And goodbye from Stefan Constantinescu.
Thanks, guys, and thanks for listening.